You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer studios, I tell you all the time, drink White Claw Hard Seltzer. Support the people who support us because it's delicious and they're paying me for it. Man, if I'm a Lakers fan, if I'm a Lakers player, I am completely distraught this morning. In case you went to bed at a normal hour like a normal person, you missed it, but it finally looked like the Lakers were going to end that losing streak to the Nuggets. It looked for a second. I was thinking, man, this Lakers team looks championship ready. You got LeBron, you got AD, these guys are balling. D'Angelo Russell hitting some shots. They all of a sudden look dangerous. They were up 20 points in the second half. And then just slowly, the Nuggets just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. And that led up to a pretty wild final 4 or 5 minutes. Sam, were you awake to watch?
I was awake to watch. The NBA had me wrapped around his finger yesterday, honestly. I was locked in. Stayed up for the entirety of this one. All of the Knicks game. Had a good time with the NBA.
Two great games. Bob, were you up watching the end of the Lakers Nuggets? Or were, like a lot of normal people and normal Americans, you were asleep?
Yeah, I was a little more normal. I wanted to stay up. I just couldn't. I was fighting it. I stayed up till about the third quarter, about halfway through the third, and then woke up this morning and saw the results and tapped into my lovely YouTube TV feature and get to watch all the key plays in about 2 minutes. And that actually is kind of fun because also it just, like you said, John, there were some crazy, crazy plays. I'm saying stuff to you guys who watched it live, but LeBron was amazing. I certainly saw one of the prettiest block shots I've seen in a long time in the first quarter, that one against Jamal Murray. It was a great game, obviously. And I couldn't believe the Lakers had that big of a lead. And what, they were up 10 going into the fourth still, too. I mean, it wasn't like it, you know, they still had some distance in the fourth quarter.
They couldn't get any stops down the stretch. I mean, Jokic went 2 quarters without a field goal. He was good in the first quarter, and then they held him pretty much without a field goal the next 2 quarters. But down the stretch, I mean, he put Anthony Davis in a blender a couple times, including a big and one at the end. But, like, it was – I don't want to say vintage LeBron, but it was LeBron, like, greatest player of all time, LeBron. Like, at least, like, on his last legs, and that might be the last bullets they have to fire. But, like, LeBron – the game gets back to 2, I think, with 4 minutes left, 5 minutes left. You're like, okay, yeah, they're good. They might get blown out. You know, I had +7.5, and I'm like, man, I might go from up 20 to not even covering this game in the second half. But then LeBron hits back-to-back threes, gets them back up 8, down the stretch, had a big and one, missed the free throw, and then had a big steal with a minute left that led to a dunk that put them up 3. That it looked like, okay, if they can just get one stop, they can win this, and that's how it felt a couple times. But Jokic and Murray and even Michael Porter Jr. on the game tying through, they just kept making championship-level shots. And you realize, oh, yeah, they are the defending champions, and they're worthy champions, and you're going to have to cut their head off. They're not going to make mistakes. You're going to have to actually come down and beat them. And with 25 seconds left, LeBron had a wide-open three from the top of the key, the chance to win the game, and he missed it. The Nuggets got the rebound, and then Jamal Murray came down and beat the buzzer, which I couldn't help but kind of laugh at that just because I think everyone waited all of March Madness for a buzzer beater, and we didn't get one. And then we got a really clutch one, you know, in game 2 of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, that shot was amazing. And just what we were talking about, I think, yesterday about D'Angelo Russell, like the Lakers need him to step up, and sure enough, he did. I mean, he had a great game. AD, great game. I mean, it wasn't enough. And Denver, again, looking the part of a defending champ. A couple of those Jamal Murray plays I saw too, including that game winner. that always takes me back to where I really got captivated with him, was that bubble season, because I mean he played out of his mind then, and he's just he might be. I don't find myself rooting for guys who are Kentucky players in the NBA, but he might be my favorite ex-Kentucky player in the league. I mean, there's a lot of good ones, obviously, and I don't have a problem with Maxey. I don't have a problem with AD, but Murray has just always been so smooth to me. And that, God, that shot he hit to win it, that's a classic right there.
Yeah, he hasn't been great statistically in the first two games, at least shooting-wise. He's 9 of 24 both games, I believe is the number. That makes him 18 of 48. But he was nails down the stretch. I think he had 3 buckets down the stretch, including the game winner. He was awesome. I mean, if you look at Anthony Davis' stat line, it's going to say great game. But if I'm a Lakers fan, like I'm absolutely disgusted with Anthony Davis because he did absolutely nothing in the second half. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't score. He couldn't get stops. He got the game winner put right in his grill, which, I mean, afterwards he's asked about in the postgame presser, like, what happened on that shot? And he just says, Jamal Murray made the shot. And then he just slams the microphone down and gets up and storms off. Like, I'm sure they're frustrated. That's 10 straight losses to the Nuggets. And they probably feel like they're just as good as the Nuggets. And, like, they've been in probably, of the 6 playoff games, they probably feel like they've had a chance to win 5 of them. And yet they're 0-6.
Yeah, he had some crazy number. Didn't he score, like, was it 26 in the first half? Or
I want to say maybe 28, actually. Like, I want to say maybe he only had or maybe even 30. Like, he had fewer than 6 points in the second half. Like,
I know he didn't score in the fourth quarter at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he got a bucket right at the beginning. They went to a pick and roll, like, basically out of the second half. I think he got 2 points. And then I think he went the rest of the game without scoring. That's kind of the problem of being on the morning show, is, like, you're lucky just to make it to the end of the game, but you don't really have time to dissect, like, actual stats and find cool stuff. We need a designated fourth person that's just their job to round up all the stats first thing in the morning to really drive it home. But, like, yeah, like, Anthony Davis was not good. He was not good in the second half. And if you're a Lakers fan, yeah, like I said, you just have to be kind of distraught. If you're a LeBron fan, you had a game where you're like, it felt like he was in control. Without scoring, I mean, he was dominating the game, and then he did start scoring, and you're like, oh man, this is going to be added to the resume in terms of great moments. It felt a little bit like a throwback to the Cavs Warrior series where he's dominating that team and finding ways to keep them in the game. But just like it did back in 17 and 18, it did feel like a Warriors game where LeBron doesn't get quite enough help, because outside of D'Angelo Russell, no one down the stretch is really giving him anything.
Yeah, I'm looking at Davis's line, like you said, John. You know, he shot 14 and 19 from the field, so it sounds like he just didn't even shoot in the second half.
I know at one point, and I want to say it was at halftime, Anthony Davis was 13 of 14. Like, I do remember looking at him being 13 of 14, which means that, you know, at the very least, he missed, what, 4 of his last 5 shots? He went 1 of 5 down the stretch. But like you pointed out, like, the shots weren't even there. And I don't know the reasons why. I know he had to sit out a lot of the end of the third quarter and early fourth quarter with foul trouble. He picked up his 4th foul. But it was also just kind of like him just doing this thing where he disappears. And people are mad at Darvin Ham, too. Darvin Ham getting – he's going to be the scapegoat. You know, if they lose this series, Darvin Ham's going to get fired. But I thought it was a big win for the NBA last night. The opening weekend, fairly boring when you look at the scores, you look at the games. But they got a banger at the end of Sunday night, or at least a good rock fight with the Pelicans – trying to steal game 1 from the 1-seed Thunder. That was a game that came down to the wire. And then they got 2 absolute bangers on TNT last night from Knicks Sixers and Lakers Nuggets. The Nuggets just feel I know we use this word a lot. Inevitable.
God,
like you,
they're tough.
You just kept watching the clock, and you're like, man, they're just going to – they keep making plays. They keep making plays, and the Lakers can't keep getting lucky that they're missing these open shots. And sure enough, the Lakers, it was really their offense that let them down. They went, you know, a good 6 minutes without scoring.
You mentioned him too, but it bears saying again, Michael Porter balled out 6 of 10 from three-point range. Doesn't seem to have anything with his brother weighing too heavy on him. He's playing good.
He kind of mentions, well, I mean, he's got his other brother found himself in trouble too. His other brother was going to prison for, was it 18 months, 2 years or something for killing someone while drunk driving. So it's not been a good couple of weeks for Michael Porter Jr. And he talked about, you know, his teammates having his back and everything. And he's the one that came up really clutch before Murray slammed the door. But there was a moment LeBron gets a big steal, a big dunk. They're up three. The Nuggets almost throw the ball away again, and Reeves is fighting for it, with Gordon on the baseline. It's almost out of bounds, and it finds its way back up to Michael Porter Jr. at the wing, and he hits a three to tie the game. And at that point, you're like, yep, Lakers are cooked. Lakers are cooked, and that's the way it worked out. This Nuggets team's still not as good as they were last year, though. Like, you could definitely tell that when they go to the bench.
Think they're missing Bruce Brown.
They're missing Bruce Brown a lot, and they're also missing like a good version of KCP so far. But like Christian Brown gave up 10 points off the bench. Their bench in totality had 12. So he was big for them last night. But no, you know, it's really just kind of their starting five is kind of all they got. Starting five is good. We'll see if they're able to kind of carry it through the postseason. But they just don't really make too many mistakes. So if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm kind of distraught just because I feel like we blew our chance, and now we have to beat them four times in
five games.
Yeah. And that's just not going to happen.
No.
It's just not going to happen. And if you'd have won last night and you're going back to L.A., you're like, okay, you know, just win the home games. Just win the home games. We can do that. We don't have to deal with this altitude. And, you know, we get a little bit of think of a break between the series. I'm pretty sure that's how it works out. I'm pretty sure there's a – you know, at least an extra day of rest between game two and three. Game three is not till Thursday. And then after that, you know, you take your chances if you're up 2-1. But nope. The Nuggets just simply don't lose to the Lakers. What do you think about the first main game, Sam? Knicks, 76ers.
What a meltdown.
It feels the same. The Sixers have to feel the same way the Lakers do.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's exactly kind of what they feel like. And it seems like you get a... You know, you got great games from their main two, and Embiid and Maxey, and they were electric down the stretch even, and then they just crumble in the final minute of the game, basically, and give one away. And, yeah, you're now down 2-0, and it feels like they could easily be up 2-0 in this series.
I really thought they had them. I mean, they were up five. Brunson gets that three that kind of just, you know, hovers on the rim and drops in, and – I don't know if you guys felt the same way on that inbounds to Maxey. I was watching it going, you could feel it. It's like, they're going to throw it away, man. It's just like they couldn't – it was so tough. And you want to hear a fun call, listen to Mike Breen's call of it.
Double bang.
Yeah. It was great. But, yeah, that was kind of a meltdown. I couldn't help but keep watching, too. Right there, because they were showing Nick Nurse so much, my former CEO and boss, who's still the CEO at Warner Brothers Discovery, is sitting right there. He's sitting with like McEnroe and Stephen A. Smith, and you know, and he's a big Knicks fan, and that was kind of annoying me. I kept seeing him. I was like, God, there's Zaslav, man.
Was he close to Ben Stiller?
No, I don't think so. Now he was next to the Philly bench. I think Ben might be at the other end, but yeah, it was. So I kept, because there was so much going on in that end of the court, I kept seeing him. I was like, I don't want to see this guy anymore.
I got to say, Ben Stiller, it's a good moment for him. I like when celebrities are at the game and you could actually tell they care. And like Ben Stiller, he pushed back because someone on the Sixers had talked about how the Knicks celebrities aren't real fans. And Ben Stiller like got mad about that and talked about how, you know, he loves them. And he has been popping up, you know, the last 5 years that I've noticed. I'm not saying he wasn't there before, but the Hawks-Knicks series, I mean, he was victimized by Trae Young, so I'd noticed him there. But he seems to be one of those real super fans, like not necessarily the people there just to be seen, like Stephen A. Smith, like Ben Stiller seems to really care. So
yeah,
he looked really happy after the double bang. And the Sixers, man, they scored 101 points, and 69 of them came from Maxi and Embiid. And they lost. They blew a 5-point lead with a free throw to go up six with, you know, basically, I think, 24 seconds. And that loss maybe hurts more than the Lakers one just because at any moment, like, Embiid's going to get shut down, it feels like. Like, yeah. He can't – I don't trust him to be able to play a long series in this series, really. And, you know – blowing a 5-point lead with 20 seconds left feels a lot more painful, I guess, than what happened to the Lakers. But both of them pretty disgusting. And then you got to worry about the Jalen Brunson. I mean, it hit the front of the rim. It should have been a brick. He should have been getting the rebound to shoot free throws up five, and instead it falls in.
Yeah.
And then you don't call a timeout, and you turn the ball over. It leads to a scramble. But then you dodge a bullet. They miss a shot. But then you go up the offensive rebound, and you give White Dante another look at it from the top of the key, and he drains it. And, like, what the hell is all these Villanova guys running around? Like, I know we've talked about it with the Knicks, but, like, it really – like, Josh Hart and Dante, it's like they've taken all of Jay Wright's energy, all of his clutch championship energy, and they've bottled it up.
For a while they had Ryan Archidiakono or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't
Archie
remember.
Archidiakono.
I don't know if he's still on the roster, but – they had four Nova guys for a little while. You mentioned that about Stiller. That's a really good point, too, because all those guys that I was mentioning that were on the court row right next to Nick Nurse, they're all dressed up and everything. And then I saw Stiller, like, in a big hoodie, you know, and just like you said, he's there as a fan, not necessarily to be seen, which is kind of refreshing. That's another good point, too. Philly did have a timeout.
Yeah.
Call that, get it to half court. I mean, I don't know. That's pretty inexplicable now that I think about that.
I think Nick Nurse is a really, really good coach, but, man, like, Nick Nurse has urinated down his leg in a couple of really big moments, and he threw away game five, and I still remember of the 2019 finals. He threw away a game five against the Warriors when they're up 3-1 trying to close out. The Raptors had gone on a big run. They'd hit a three. They're up seven. And, like, the place is going absolutely crazy. As, like, you know, the Toronto's like, okay, we're maybe about to close this out. And, like, the Warriors were just completely rattled. But then he calls a timeout. And then Klay Thompson comes, and I remember just catches fire, and they end up coming back and winning. And that game might have actually been in Golden State. But either way, the Warriors were rattled, and it looked like they were done for. And he calls a timeout and ruins that. And then last night, he doesn't call a timeout. Maybe he learned his lesson. Like, hey, no timeouts from me. I'm going to overcorrect. I made this mistake once, and it almost cost me a championship. I'm not calling a timeout. And instead, I'm wait, there's Maxi falling down. Oh, God. Oh, God, the Knicks got the ball. Two great games, though.
Great game. One more thing is I can't believe how effective a player Isaiah Hartenstein's become over time. I mean, I remember back when he played, I think it was with Houston. I mean, he barely saw the floor. Now he was a factor last night. I mean, he's their five. You know, they have Mitchell Robinson healthy, but Hartenstein had more minutes, almost double the minutes.
No, Hartenstein's good.
Yeah.
Hartenstein's good. He's a solid player. He was always kind of one of those NBA nerds. He was on the roster there in terms of underrated guys that people, like, really love watching and stuff. But he's finally, you know, this year moved into the starting lineup, and now, you know, is not a secret anymore and is thought of as a really good contributor there. The Knicks are tough, man.
Yeah, they are.
They're tough.
I mean, and Josh Hart always blows my mind. 6'4", had 15 boards last night. He is, like, the best rebounding, smallish NBA guy I've seen in recent memory. Nova guy.
21-15. Yeah. I mean, if I'm a Sixers fan, that makes me sick. Because they've done a really good job of stopping Jalen Brunson. Like, they've had Jalen Brunson in handcuffs. He, like Jamal Murray, you know, hasn't shot well. You know, he was 8 of 29 last night. His 1-3 was one that hit the rim and bounced in. So you've really locked him down. But it's the other guys that just keep make them plays. And DiVincenzo, you know, with the three to go up and eventually win it. Josh Hart, we talked about, 21 points, 15 rebounds. That's got to make you sick. Now, I will say that I don't think those guys are going to play that way in Philly. Like, I do still think Philly can, if Embiid can hold up, I do still think Philly is just as good as the Knicks. It was a coin flip series coming in. They came on the wrong side of the coin the first two. So, like the Lakers, they have to win five or four of their next five, which seems daunting. But I do think, you know, I guess I said you feel worse than the Lakers, and maybe that's because I actually think that the Sixers should win the series or can win the series. The Lakers are just trying to pull off a big upset, and you're worried about Embiid's health and all that. But the Sixers, I do still think, can win two in Philadelphia and get back in the series. I don't think the Lakers are winning two in L.A. Feels like the Lakers are cooked. As long as Embiid can still go out there and play, I do still think the Sixers can get back in the series. I think they're a good matchup.
Have you seen this courtside angle that they're shown on social media of Kyle Lowry falling to the floor at the end of that Knicks game when DiVincenzo hit the three? Because if you're watching it on TV, it looks like Hartenstein cleared him out and, you know, maybe no foul called, et cetera. But if you watch it from the baseline camera angle that they're showing, he flopped. I mean, actually Embiid shoved him to the floor. There was no real contact with Hartenstein.
Embiid shoved two to the floor.
Lowry.
Okay, so Hartenstein flopped or Lowry flopped?
Lowry flopped.
Hey, you can't say that's a little bit of a contradiction there. Did Embiid push him to the floor or did like get Lowry flop? Like, because
he pushed. No, that's the point. I think they were trying to get a flop.
Okay.
Yeah, because there was a bunch of people down there. And again, if you're watching it on TV from a main camera angle, it looked like maybe it was contact with Hartenstein.
So friendly fire, but Lowry, well, I'm asking if Lowry was doing his thing where he's flopping around, you know, and selling contact, or if actually Embiid hit him hard enough to put him down, because Embiid's a big old boy.
No, he was, I think Lowry was maybe doing the flop and Embiid just kind of helped it along.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Just kind of nudged him to the floor.
Gotcha. I hate Kyle Lowry, man.
Yeah.
I was rooting for him hard in 2019, but like since that moment, he is one of my five most hated NBA players. But he's been really good for them.
Yeah.
No, fun series. I thought it was a good night for the NBA. I think tonight's going to be kind of boring. So maybe you can take tonight off and get some sleep and all that, Sam.
Preds game. Got to stay up late again.
Damn. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Are you doing any school right now?
Yeah, I'm doing it right when I get home from the show, like during my classes, try and rip out like a power hour-ish nap, keep myself loaded for the late night games, and then roll into a late night Preds game.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You got a system?
Yeah, you got to trust the system. I feel like I've been doing this system since March Madness, though. I'm going crazy here.
Yeah, that's I was, again, a little thankful when March Madness ended, but now it's just starting all over again.
Yeah.
We'll talk some NBA hoops later throughout the show as we look ahead to game twos tonight. I think it'll be kind of boring. I do think it'll be boring, but we'll switch gears after the break. We'll talk some Tennessee basketball updates on the portal, update on what we're hearing on the roster as the transfer portal blows. Send us a break.
It's getting that time of year. It's a little cold today, but again, if you're going to do some camping, we've got a place you should check out. This segment brought to you by Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. If you want to get more information, check them out, tworiversrvresort.com. So things keep happening. Tennessee basketball, at least so we hear, John.
The latest as Knoxville turns. Have the same flow as the World Turns. What a great name for a soap. As the World Turns is a really, really solid name.
That and Days of Our Lives.
Which one do you like better as a name?
Oh, As the World Turns. That was my mom's. My mom used to call them her stories, is what she used to say. That's what she, you know, that show went on forever and ever. It's no longer around, but yeah, that just because of that link to my mom, I'll always hold As the World Turns as the goat.
My mom was a guiding light woman. She liked guiding light.
Yeah, I think my mom, because they were on the same network, they might have been back to back, as a matter of fact. So I think my mom was a guiding light person too.
So as Tennessee's basketball transfer portal roster blows and turns and shifts and shapes and shakes and all these things, what's the latest, Bob?
Well, we've got Felix. I was thinking of Isaac Okoro. Felix Okpara making a visit to Knoxville today. You know, the more I hear about this guy, the more I'm interested. Again, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I think people look at his line at Ohio State, 6-7 points a game, somewhere in there, about 6 boards a game. Pretty high efficiency on blocks. Only played about 23 minutes a game, but was a starter. So I think people look at that and compare it with a Jonas Adu line, and it's a little different, namely in points scored, and so it gives you a little pause. But I keep hearing about, again, this guy's motor, this guy's physicality. I think about how Barnes likes to shape players and develop talent. Okpara's got a couple seasons left. I think I'm in, you know, and from everything we hear, even from, again, from Ohio State people, it sounds like the conventional wisdom on this is that it's Tennessee's to lose in terms of his visit today, and maybe we'll get some good news. But again, you never know. He was a guy, the minute that Aaron Bradshaw had committed to transfer from Kentucky to Ohio State, Okpara at that moment in time was saying, hey, I'm still committed to Ohio State. And that's obviously changed in just a little over a week. So I guess you just never know. But he's coming in today. There is a definite scuttle out there that might be becoming more legitimate, that maybe they listened to your ultimatum, John, about our guy Igor Milicic. Sounds like there could be some good news on the horizon with him. We'll just have to wait and see how today plays out. But I don't know. The things, you know, it'll be interesting to see where we are maybe at the end of today heading into tomorrow when we're doing tomorrow's show.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the Igor development, because I gave him a deadline and he didn't meet the deadline. But maybe, you know, these days, paperwork, you gotta work out your contracts, you gotta work out everything, and he's Polish, maybe they move a little slow. I don't really know. Maybe they're a little bit more deliberate and think things through a little more. I don't know, but Awaka, I'm done with Awaka.
I think we all are.
That deadline has firmly moved past. Igor, I'm willing to give him, you know, a little bit of grace, just because I forgot he's Polish, you know.
Croatian.
He's Croatian.
Okay, well, his dad's Polish.
It's Eastern Europe, so close enough.
But. His dad coaches the Polish basketball team. That's what I meant. So he's Croatian.
He really?
Huh?
His dad coaches the Polish basketball team?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, his dad's the head coach of the Polish basketball team, so I guess I've been calling him Polish. Because we had the whole thing yesterday about Poland, and you guys didn't correct me yesterday. Where were you at on that yesterday, Bob?
I think we did.
Maybe just in your mind.
Remember we had that whole talk about Eastern Europe?
Yeah, and I know, and I was saying the Polish are the ones I think I could, you know, had a whole thing about Poland.
But I don't think it was linked at that moment to Igor.
I don't know why the hell else I'd be talking about Poland.
Again, Eastern Europe, you were in the vicinity. You were adjacent.
Yeah, I just know his dad coaches the Polish basketball team, so I guess that makes sense. Not everybody who coaches American teams are American, so okay, fair enough. Croatian. I don't know how they move in Croatia either, so, I mean, the point remains.
Faster.
Well. The point remains. I don't know how they get down in Croatia either, so I'm willing to show a little bit of grace.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm a little excited about how today's playing out. Maybe we'll because it feels like we've talked about this for a while. The other one I've heard, and I don't know if you guys have heard anything to this effect, but so Cade Tyson did his visit to North Carolina this past weekend, and he did it, didn't commit. And there's, again, scuttle out there that Tennessee was meeting with him again possibly last night, talking with him. So what I find interesting is if all this is real, and we rewind back to I think I was the one saying I'm comfortable with Barnes getting two kids out of the transfer portal. This could be crazy town, man. This could be as many as four. You know, you already got D-Stone. You could have a couple more. This isn't even counting Chaz Lanier, who, again, hasn't yet entered the portal. But the talk there is once he enters, he seems to take a shine to Tennessee. So maybe Barnes is like this is new Rick Barnes now, apparently. I mean, if they're talking about three or maybe four, they're, you know, you got to believe they're not going to get all these guys, obviously. But they're definitely out there engaged with many at this point in time, and it's, I think it's good to see. We need it right now. Again, John, you said it, you know, I said it last week that Adu was dead to me. I'm afraid we're gonna have to make the same claim with Tobe. John's already there, but I think I'm about there myself. It's just gonna be an interesting couple days as the portal turns. We need some music for that. Sam, work on that.
Knowing Sam and his winners and losers intro, by the time we get the portal, as the world turns, it'll be football season.
Portal music out.
Yeah. Nah, the football portal doesn't really matter.
He'll play that CBS SEC music that they play, the theme music.
Like, unless you're talking about a quarterback, I don't know how much the football portal actually matters. Especially like this next go around, like from spring to fall. Like, I don't think none of that's really going to impact the upcoming season. But basketball, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, it's crazy, but the moves that are being made right now are championship moves, you know, whether in your conference or a national championship or at least like Final Four. Teams are jockeying for a position there. Like, it's crazy because you don't really think of championship programs being the transfer portal teams, but next year is going to be wide open. Next year is going to be wide open. Like, Tennessee, if they nail this portal one more time, like, they're going to be back in the mix of the top six or seven team. If they find the right combination of size and shooting, and you find the right culture fits. And, you know, I will say, I know I'm kind of having fun with the deadlines and wanting guys to move faster, but there is a part of me that hopes that Tennessee is also being very diligent and not just throwing out offers to people and actually, like, talking and really, like, vetting them culturally to make sure that they really want a guy there and to make sure the player knows what he's getting into, not just promising them, hey, here you come on in. Yeah, shots. You could take those here. Look at our boy Dalton Connect. We let him shoot all the time. You can be that. You know, I hope that they're actually like, hey, here's your role. Here's how you're going to fit. Here's what the team expects of you. Here's Zakai. Here's Jamai. It's kind of nice that that rhymes. Here's what they're going to do as leaders of the team. If you want in, think about it. Let us know.
I'm certain that they are. I mean, I think that might be why this is dragging out by our measure a little bit. I mean, if you look at so two of the top teams that in terms of transfer portal activity right now, one of them is Indiana. You know, they've got Balo, they've got Miles Rice, they've got Kanan Phillips, I think, or Kanan Carlisle is his name. And they're also now getting this Luke Goody kid from Illinois, it appears. But the concern there is that's a lot of talent, but even their fans are saying, are they all going to be able to play together? It's just kind of like a land grab. Kansas did the same. I mean, Self's got all sorts of talent, but I've talked about this before. How well will they be able to play together? And I do think that that's critical still with Tennessee, and that might be why maybe the only reason they came back to Cade Tyson is because he hasn't committed to Carolina. Maybe they thought the same thing the fans did, and once that didn't happen, it's like, well, let's make another run. But I agree with you, John. I think we – you know, chemistry works for this team. We know that that's a big piece of it. Culture is a big piece of it. I never have doubts that that's still a priority for them.
Yeah, I guess until Cade Tyson makes it official where he's going, you keep that door open because he's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You keep trying because what he came out of his North Carolina visit this weekend with no commitment, which apparently reportedly now has led to Tennessee coaches scheduling another in-home visit, I guess, to go and kind of make one more pitch to him.
Yeah, it said that it's very possible that there was discussions happening last night, whether those were in person or not. Okay. So, yeah. And then if, yeah, so let's just see today how it goes. Maybe we get some, it sounds like we could be getting some news on Igor. Hopefully the visit with Okpara goes well. Could be very different here in the next day or two.
It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird having a completely new look to the team, but them not being freshmen. You know, I know we keep talking about it, but it's just the reality of college basketball now.
Oh, yeah. It was almost a non-story for us yesterday when we talked about Dwayne Brown committing, right? It was like, oh, yeah, by the way, that's what it's become now, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, I don't know how much you can really rely on the high school commits to actually become a big part of your program because you get recruited over every year.
Yeah.
And you got to find minutes. And maybe you can't set the freshmen as much anymore. Maybe you do have to give them some run up there to keep them somewhat happy. Hour one of the books. We kick off hour two with some headlines that you might have missed yesterday. We called about last night. Sam's got it for you. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Looking for a luxury.
Tennessee baseball coming off of a big series win in Lexington. Set to take the field today before they play Missouri starting on Thursday. We're joined by the man who helped get that win in Game 3, the face of the pitching staff, Kirby Connell, friend of the morning show. Kirby, top of the morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me on here.
How did it feel going into that series against Kentucky? It's not something that happens very often at Tennessee anymore, but, you know, kind of, I don't want to say underdogs, but the lower-ranked team. Was that extra motivation? Did that feel weird as a Tennessee team going on the road and being, you know, lower-ranked? What was the mindset there?
I think Coach B set us up perfectly. He warned us before the series. We knew it was going to be a big week, especially coming off the LSU series. We knew it was going to be a big week, and we knew that, you know, Kentucky was pretty good. And we knew that, you know, going into it, it was going to be a three-round fight. It's just a matter of who could come out on the end and who could play all three games. And I think it helped on Saturday. You know, we lost on Friday, a tough one on Friday. Came out on Saturday, came out really, really hot. And, you know, we got off our stool on Saturday, got off the stool and started throwing some punches. So for us, is we look at every single series as a three-round fight. So for us, it's, you know, you go into Sunday 1-1. It's just a one game, one round. Who can win? Who can stay the longest and come out with a win?
Morning, Kirby. I was thinking about you when in that game on Sunday. First of all, how's your arm feeling today, a couple days later?
Feels pretty good.
Good. I was wondering what's going through your head. You come in, you kind of had to help stop the bleeding, right? They were, you know, Kentucky was batting the ball around, and you come in and trigger an inning-ending double play, which we were talking about yesterday, saying that was kind of an unsung but key moment in that game, because then that allowed, again, stop the bleeding a little bit, and then Tennessee came in and the offense does what it does. When you're going in there and you're, you know, you get a couple pitches in and that kind of play happens, you know, does that feel like, obviously it probably feels like mission accomplished, but then, you know, what's going through your head then about going on to the next inning?
Yeah. You know, when you come in those situations like that, you know, your main goal is to try to get, you know, for me, if I come in with, you know, runner on first and second, first and third, bases loaded, try to get a ground ball, let defense play behind me. And, you know, try to limit the pitch count right there. You don't want to finish the inning in that scenario right there with like 15 pitches. You want to try to get it done in less than eight. So luckily I was able to do that, and then, you know, get the offense back in there, because I knew we were going to get to the guy. It was just going to take us a few innings to get to it, and, you know, it just happened to be that inning. and then, you know, just be able to go back out there and, you know, throw strikes.
Yeah, walk us through the mindset of being out there, and, you know, you hear the phrase shut down innings, you know, after the offense scores, you're trying to go out there and, you know, kind of keep the momentum. But walk us through the mindset of, you know, you come in at 6-2, then all of a sudden by the time you go back out there, Tennessee has the lead and you're staying out there and the offense is still exploding, but Kentucky's battling and they're scoring runs too. So I'm just curious in the mindset of coming in there to put out a fire, but then it switches to, okay, now I'm trying to nurse a lead because the offense has given me the lead back. How does that change your approach on the mound?
Yeah, with an offense like Kentucky, my main goal was, you know, just try to limit the damage. You know, they're gonna score runs, they're gonna get on base, they're gonna move runners. Just try to limit it as much as I can, just so I can let the offense get back in there and keep the bats hot. But you know, with Kentucky being, you know, as good as they are this year, and you know, they have a lot of good hitters. They have a lot of good guys that can leave the yard. They can play small ball. They can leave the yard whenever they want. So for me, it was just try to limit the damage, try to keep guys off the base path.
Kirby, you were talking about that three-round fight mentality when you're coming into these SEC series, and y'all have done such a great job of being able to win those series on Sunday afternoons. Do you feel like just with a team full of guys that have a lot of experience here, do you feel like that's a big advantage of y'all, you know, that you guys have over teams when you're coming down the stretch here in SEC play and heading towards the tournament?
I think with us being an older group as we are, I think being able to, you know, experience games like that, you know, a lot of our guys, like our thing was, V mentioned it, it was, you know, this past weekend was a super regional kind of weekend. It was, you're going to play three games, you know, you're going to play three games, and it's just a matter of, you know, who can win two out of the three. And no matter how you do it, somebody's got to win two of them. So if it means you lose the first game, win the second one, that means you got a third round. You got that third round. You got to go out there and, you know, play the best baseball you can.
The knockout punch came from a tag into Marcus Phillips, you know, who got his first conference action, came in, slammed the door. Just talk about his performance there coming in and being able to get that final out.
Yeah, you know, it was really, really huge out of him. I think that was, like B said, you know, give him some wise words. And I told him when he came in, I said, you're the right guy for this. I mean, that you've earned this spot, and you put in a lot of work, so go out there and do it. And, you know, I think it was very, very awesome and very, very huge to see out of him. You know, we all had a lot of trust in him in that moment, and we knew he was going to do the best that he could, and whatever happened, happened.
Feels like that's got to get him some more opportunities, right? Like when you come in and perform in that level, like now I think you can add him to the rotation of arms coming out of that bullpen in big moments.
Yeah, he's a really big arm, as you saw, you know, throwing 97, 98. It's just a matter of, you know, getting him in that right mindset is, hey, go out there and throw that thing over the white deal as hard as you possibly can, and you'll be perfect.
Kirby, can you just talk a little bit about can you talk about that response on Saturday? You know, you kind of come off of a game on Friday that you feel like you wish you were on the winning end of, but you didn't come out at the start on Saturday and you really just kind of smack him in the mouth. Can you talk about that mindset that you guys had coming into Saturday morning and kind of maybe what that message was on Friday night?
Yeah, you know, our you know, Coach B is, you know, we lose a game, two runs, one run, whatever. It's you know, our main thing is, you know, let them celebrate. You know, if they celebrate too much, or you know, if we just gotta be ready to go out there and throw the first punch. And I think that's what Simo and Burke did, as you saw, and then Billy, and then KT, and then Dylan, and then Dean. You know, it was just, you know, we're just stacking them on. It was, you know, Simo and Burke let it off with a homer, and then it was like, all right, now what can we do? Like at that moment, it kind of felt like all nine players were going to hit a home run right after each other. And, you know, for us, it was just, you know, bring the energy in the dugout. And I think that's what we did, you know, this whole weekend. You know, it takes every single person on the team that went with us, that's even at home, it took every single person. And V mentioned that it was, you know, no matter the role that you had, it took every single one of us out there to win both those games and bring the energy in all three games.
Christian Moore's pretty good at baseball, huh?
Yeah, he's pretty good at he's pretty good in the box and on defense. You know, that man has helped, you know, us defensive wise and offensive wise in times that we really need him.
All right, you mentioned it, so I feel like it's fair game. You talked about Kentucky and the cheerleading. Do you think Vitello was talking about Kentucky when he said that they're not the cheerleading team, or that you guys aren't the cheerleading team, with all due respect?
I got no comment on that. You know, that's V's comment. I have no comment on anything that, you know, that they may have done this weekend.
You know, sometimes a no comment says everything we need to know.
All right.
It is what it is. You know, they play baseball a certain way, and we play baseball a certain way, and it's just how it is. It's baseball.
Yeah, that was still good getting out of that weekend with that win for the series. We're being joined by Kirby Connell. Hey, Kirby, looking ahead to this week. So, Western Carolina tonight, right? And then Missouri, which looks a little, at least statistically, looks a little offensively challenged, but has some pitching. But this is one of those that, of course, you want to go out and win every game you can, but this is one that it feels like if there's ambitions to really make some noise at the top of the conference standings, make sure you lock up a great seed for the conference tournament, all those things, the mindset of trying to sweep this one feels pretty strong from a fan perspective. You know, again, I know you guys approach it like you want to win them all, but any different approach with this kind of team versus one like last week that was a kind of a battle royale with Kentucky?
No, it's you know, we look at every single SEC weekend as a three-round fight, no matter who it is, and we're going to go out there and, you know, like you said, we're going to try to win three games, but you know, we're going to look at it as, you know, take it one game at a time, and then one pitch at a time. You know, go out there, try to win every single pitch, and you know, whoever can do that the most times is usually going to win.
It's been pretty fun, Kirby, to watch kind of this Tennessee home run record go back and forth between Christian Moore and Blake Burke here. You know, just kind of wondering, is there any sort of friendly competition or any action within the locker room on kind of who ends up in the lead at the end of the season there with that home run record, whether it be Christian Moore or Blake Burke, and then kind of talk about just, you know, how those two work off of each other and their mindset and how they can make each other better.
You know, I wouldn't say there's any, you know, friendly competition. It's just two guys, you know, trying to be the best they can and in the box. And, you know, just, I think it's awesome because everybody around them, like in the locker room and the dugout, is, you know, we're cheering them on, and it's just, we treat it like it's, you know, their first AB of their college career. And, you know, if they hit a home run, they hit a home run. If they hit a single, they hit a single. It's just, we're going to treat it the same way. We're going to, you know, celebrate whenever they do. But, no, it's our thing is you go up there and, you know, whatever their mindset is and whatever their goal is for that game or, you know, approach is, you know, it's going to stay the same. You know, they're not going to try to leave the yard and, you know, say, oh, well, I want to be the home run champ. No, it's they're doing it for the team, and it's truly amazing to see.
Walk me through the process of coming out with the walk-up songs for batters and the, you know, your song coming out of the bullpen. Do you fill out a form at the beginning of the year and then you're locked in? Because I hear the same songs every game, and I'm wondering if we can get some variety. Are you guys, like, contractually obligated now to keep them the same the entire year?
I like to keep mine the same. I've kept mine the same for the last 3.5 years. So, I think it's, you know, it's a walk-up song. It's whatever you feel like you can focus the most on and whatever you can, you know, hype yourself up to. But no, I think it stays the same. And I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, really enjoy its songs. And I think sometimes the fans even enjoy them. And because, like, they know, like, when somebody comes up to bat, they start singing their walk-up song because they know it's going to be that song. And I think it's, you know, I think it's cool to, you know, see how the you know, Vol Nation reacts to some of the walk-up songs and how they, you know, interact with them.
Are you guys doing the Billy Amick stroke clap in the dugout whenever he's coming up?
Yes, sir. So they actually played in Kentucky. They played Billy's they played Billy's walk-up song during like the middle of an inning, and I was in the bullpen, so I could see the Tennessee fans, and everybody was doing it, and they immediately turned the song off, and I loved it.
That's great.
Awesome. Seemed like a lot of Tennessee fans made the trip. It was a fun win to watch from a fan perspective. It was always nice to put Kentucky in their place. Tony's comments about their antics, wink, wink, his no comments that we just got from Kirby. It was extra sweet getting a top five road series. Best of luck this weekend. Hopefully you get a rest tonight. Hopefully you don't have to get out there and pitch tonight. You can keep that arm iced up. But Kirby, thanks for joining us. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
No, I think we pretty much hit everything. Just thank you for having me on here.
Appreciate you, Kirby.
Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you.
Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three. What do we got on docket in hour three, Bob? What do we got? College basketball?
A little college basketball because there's still a lot of activity swirling around. We've got our own portal drama going on, but there's a lot still happening. That's just the state of the game. And then we're going to continue on with some NFL draft talk likely too.
Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Into fashion forward statement pieces for the entire family. That's right, your lover, your children, your mother, your grandfather. Something for the entire family. You can experience the comfort of their signature polos, outerwear, and other accessories cleverly designed to keep you in the swing of everyday life. The spring line's been out for a while. Go check it. I still think that orange flower shirt's going to be perfect to wear for Nico and the boys in the fall. One's up. Acknowledge the Polynesian prince, the tribal chief of the Tennessee football program. Check them out today at inwardhalf.com, and look for them in your favorite pro shop. Sam, our boy Todd at Inward Half, he texted me yesterday and said he was pretty disgusted or embarrassed for us at your winning score in the Fan Run Open. Said that 9-under was pretty embarrassing. To which I said, 9-under sounds pretty good to me.
Did he know he was at a par 3 course?
Yeah. Yeah, he knows where we're at. He knows the course. I mean, he's a golf expert here. He's in the biz.
Sorry, Todd.
He said if he went out there, it's 12-under at least.
I'll say, Todd, come play with me next year at the Fan Run Open.
Well, he did. He said he was going to play, and he said I was going to be on his team and that we'd win. He's like, you don't even have to hit any shots. He's
okay.
He told me just to be there for the vibes and to –
Oh, you were saying you don't have to hit shots. Yeah, I thought he was telling that to me after my 6-under score.
No. He told me I ain't got to worry about hitting any shots. Just come out there for the vibes, take some pictures, hit some putts.
Yeah.
He said, and he's guaranteeing at least a 12-under.
Okay.
I said, well, it was raining a little bit in the first hour. I was trying to defend you boys.
I was a little pressed that I didn't win, I will say. I mean, I was really hoping for a win there, but at least it stayed in-house, I guess. But, yeah, I guess Todd's going to have me motivated for the rest of the year.
I think 9-under is a decent score, but 6-under is you guys should have done better.
We left a couple out on the table. I think we could have gotten to 8 easily.
You know who's got little-known fact? John and I saw it firsthand, at least on the greens. The boss man looks like he's got a little game.
Yeah, actually, he was out there sinking some long putts, and he's like, I'm actually really good at golf.
Let's go.
Yeah, he goes, as he said, felt like I was watching a episode of, like, the Ted Lasso episode when he was playing darts, you know, where he was dropping some putts, and he was like, a little thing you don't know about me is I'm okay at golf, you know, and putts are rolling in, and, you know, long ones, too. I mean,
I feel like I could see him having some good short game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a nicer comparison that you made there of Ted Lasso, because when I was watching, I was like, man, this is like in The Office when they wouldn't let Kevin play basketball. And then he's just there draining, you know, 18-foot jumpers afterwards after they, you know, they made Stanley play instead of him. And he's just in his suit jacket just draining jumpers. That's how I felt Ryan, who no one asked him to be on the team. You know, I don't know if he would have been able to play since he was helping run the thing with me. And, you know, we were tag-teaming it and making sure everybody was taken care of. But whoever would have asked him to be on the team would have had a really good golfer out there. At least they would have been making some putts. I will say that.
Houston's immediately coming to my defense here. He said, did he know that we started in a downpour?
Everyone started in a downpour, including the team that went none under. But also, like, also important to note, Houston, since you're listening, you were the only team with five golfers and a caddy.
So Marcus can't hit shots. I mean, let's not act like...
You told me he gave you advice on the club that worked.
I would almost argue that Marcus maybe put some mixed signals into my brain.
Wow. Wow. You hear this, Marcus? So after you slept their bags around, carrying their bags and giving them advice and provided snacks.
Driving around in his own cart.
As you provided snacks and good vibes, Sam saying you actually hurt the team.
Man, the flag. He did a lot.
I'm not saying he hurt the team.
You kind of said he hurt the team.
I'm saying he might have put some mixed signals into my head.
Well, that means it hurt your game, which means that, you know, I think you – went in there expecting to be the best player on the team. So, like, if the best player on the team isn't up to his A game, Sam, I don't know how you could say that that's not hurting the team.
Sure. I'll be better next year.
And also, Houston. Look, I love Houston. Saying you started a downpour is a little hyperbolic. It was a slight drizzle.
It was a drizzle.
It was cold and drizzly. It was not a downpour. Let's not Al Bundy this and act like you've scored four touchdowns in your high school state championship. It was a slight drizzle.
Definitely wasn't a downpour. It was more of like you're standing on the tee box like, let's hope this doesn't stay up for the whole type of round type of thing.
I'm not saying it was great for vibes or morale. I'm not making that case because I was cold. Like, I was supposed to be taking some videos and doing some stuff, and I was like, you know what? My hands are too cold. I can't even get a text message off. I didn't even use my phone for 2 hours. I just kept my phone up because it was too cold to use. So I'm not acting like it was comfortable. So don't get me wrong. I'm just pushing back a little bit on a downpour. I was there. It was not a downpour.
You know, maybe it's the downpour when Houston could have been getting some good work in on the range. That's my spin zone.
I didn't show up till 8:15. At no point was it downpouring post 8:15. So, yeah, maybe if he was out there at 7:45 wanting to get some work in, maybe it was raining harder at that point. I don't know. But from 8:15 throughout the entirety of the day, it was not at no point downpouring.
Sam is that could be construed that you're saying Houston needed more time on the range. I mean, this is your story.
Wow, what a spin by Bob. He's trying to drive a wedge, pun intended, in between you two.
Trying to divide this team.
Yeah, Marcus, you pretty much, Sam's like, it's not my fault, man.
Well, we didn't have to do that for Marcus. Sam took the chance to do that himself. Sam took the blowtorch to Marcus all by himself.
I'm not dragging Houston through the mud at all. We wouldn't have gotten to 6 under without his putter, so I'm perfectly happy with
that. That's
him.
Good.
What the hell did you do then?
I was hitting the tee shots, man. I'm getting us to 15 or 20 feet to hit the putt.
Streets told me that two of Houston's birdies came off of Julia's tee shots. That's what I was told.
One of them did. I don't know. I don't remember every single birdie.
Or she said two of his big putts. Maybe one was a safe par. I don't know, but
he did have one to save par, yeah, I think.
Your listener player was good too, right?
Yeah, David was a beast.
Yeah.
David was a beast. Me and him were taking care of the tee shots.
So you guys are doing the tee shots, and Houston's doing the putting. It seems like you guys should have had better than 6 under. Again, not to put down you, Houston, or David. I'm just trying to do the math here. Math ain't mathing. Somebody didn't pull their weight. Maybe the tee shots weren't as good as you are claiming. Maybe you're getting by off just the first shot of the day. Because that's all I've heard you talk about is your first shot of the day being, you know, 5 feet away.
I had a couple good ones.
Okay, I mean, I'm not a golfer, so I mean, I don't really have a leg to stand on. I mean, my team, I've been told we would have got 12 under, so I mean, like, my team would have been champions. I was too busy to do other things.
Can't win them all.
Or one, apparently.
I hit our group text up after it, though. I said I'm going to be motivated for the next 364.
He's not backing down. He said it was a downpour when we put those signs out. I was waterlogged, and we got zero range time. So
correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not a warm-up guy, so I'm not going to act like I wanted to be at the range at like 7:30 in the pouring rain hitting shots.
First of all, I was out there at the same exact time putting the signs down. We literally pulled off at the same time. Second of all, I'm 95% sure. I can't say with certainty, but 95% sure I saw someone in the cart with Houston. which means he should have been just driving around
having someone put the
having
sign
someone
out for
put
him.
Them out like I did. Now maybe he got out and was tag teaming, which seems dumb because it's harder to put it in park versus just let somebody get out and do it. So like maybe Houston wasn't doing it the most efficient way. But again, I'm 95% sure someone was in the golf cart with him, which means that he should not have been quote unquote waterlogged. I wasn't waterlogged. Hell, I came out of the day with a damn sunburn on the top of my head. It couldn't have been too rainy out there. You know, some people just like making excuses, though, I guess. So, you know,
I'm not trying to make excuses.
I was more so talking about Houston at this point. It's crazy how we could be in the same place and have completely different takeaways from what happened. This is how arguments happen. This is the political landscape just in a nutshell right here.
That one little storm cell was just right over the 10th tee, not the first tee.
You know,
must have had that wrong.
You know, maybe. Maybe.
Wow.
6 under, you know, I was expecting better, to be honest, but
I kind of was too. I felt like we could have gotten to 7 or 8.
Now, I will say, since we're on the topic, you mentioned Marcus bringing the team down. We talked about Julia hitting a couple good tee shots, Houston seeking some putts, you hitting some tee shots, David hitting some tee shots. Did Tucker just bring absolutely nothing to the table?
No, I mean, I thought Tucker did a good job.
Doing what?
He just hit, like, I thought Tucker would hit some solid tee shots, but it just wasn't, like, our closest one of the day.
So he,
like, if we had one on the green that was, like, 15 feet, like, I think Tucker had a couple where he was, like, 25 or 30 feet away, but it's just, like, we weren't taking his shot.
Did he make any putts?
No putts for Tucker.
So Tucker did nothing for the team.
Tucker and I were having a great time in the car together.
So Tucker was there for vibes.
Yeah. We got to have a vibes guy on
the
team.
Sure.
We have totally dismantled this golf team.
We're picking apart the fan run team over here.
Well, you know, I didn't want to bring it up, but, like, yeah, you were calling yourselves the Fan Run team. I'm a part of Fan Run Radio. I'm a part of Fan Run Sports. So, like, you guys kind of let me down when I see that we lost. Because, like, Tim's not trash-talking me. He's mostly focused on trash-talking Jake. But Jake's team cleared y'all by 2 strokes.
Well, allegedly.
Allegedly, sure, but
allegedly.
The final scorecard says Jake's team cleared Team Fan Run by 2 strokes. So, like,
we'll make it clear. Aaron Medley cleared Team Fan Run by 2 strokes. Jake probably did nothing.
I saw Jake hit a couple nice tee shots, you know, and I got to be honest, Jake was dealing with some – not everyone – pretty much no one defends Jake around here, but I'll defend Jake. He was dealing with some tough circumstances. You want to talk about a downpour and Houston's excuses as – to my knowledge, only one player had the bear horn out. Every time I saw him trying to hit a tee shot, Bear would hit his air horn and mess him up and, you know, just argue with him and try to troll him. So, like, Jake was having to deal with some tougher situations than most of the golfers out there, I would say.
We got air horned once.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Bear just has no respect for the game.
Yeah, Bear's just dragging the game of golf through the mud.
It was like your worst scene in Caddyshack going on with Bear. He was just, you know, flipping carts, blowing air horns.
Yeah, I was going to say, not just the game of golf. He was disrespecting the entire course with the way he was driving his golf cart around. Like, it wasn't very becoming.
Rocking, you could hear his cart, like, from 2 holes over.
Yeah.
You know, music cranked up. And, I mean, it was like Rodney Dangerfield was back to life, man.
Now, could you hear me talking in the cart a couple times? Because I got a couple looks from you guys whenever I would be there watching, and I had the liquor rep, the beer rep there, and she'd be asking questions, and we'd be, like, kind of talking.
I didn't.
Okay. Because it was you in particular. I saw you shot me a dirty look at one point.
Oh, really?
Or a look. In my mind, it might have been dirty.
I was probably just observing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I was like, oh,
no, I don't really care.
Am I being too loud?
Yeah. I don't really care if someone's, like, talking with me. I enjoy kind of holding a conversation almost when I'm playing. I don't really... I think when people are, like, talking to you on the tee box and then stop right before you shoot, that's almost more awkward for me.
Gets in your head worse.
Yeah.
If I may, the one thing I will say, and again, it's easy for John and I to pot shot because we didn't play, but you guys missed a lot of putts. You really did. I mean, Houston was solid. Short game looked good there, but I saw a lot of putts that were like, come on, man.
Wow, Bobby too with a come on, man. Like, how are you missing that one? Like, come on.
I think we did burn, like, 3 edges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to focus on the inward half.
Mm-hmm.
That's the brand name, inward half. You aim for the inner half.
I got to get better on the putting greens.
Houston has said that he did have someone in this car, but it was his wife. So he said he couldn't let her get out and get wet. So
respectable man.
Yeah. So I was 95% right that someone was in there, but I acknowledge that he had to get out of the car. I did not get out of the car. So he's being a husband there. So that's fun. Bad decision to take her with you in the cart, which, again, shout out to Jake. I didn't ask Jake. Jake took it upon himself. He volunteered to hop in and get the job done. Which, by the way, Jake was waterlogged. He shot 8 under. I'm just saying, he was out doing all the signs and stuff, too.
Once again, Jake didn't shoot 8 under. Aaron Medley shot 8 under, and Jake shot 6 under. We tied.
You're just taking 2 strokes away from him?
Yeah. I know he cheated because Marcus was talking to him on the 9th hole. He goes, "Did you take any mulligans, Jake?" And he just gave like a little shrug. He was talking, he was yapping for 5 minutes before that, and then Marcus goes, "Did you take any mulligans?" And he shut right up.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He gave a little shrug.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
We could do a fan run 30 for 30.
I mean, I thought we could play an honorable tournament, you know? Sue me.
Yeah. Wow. It's all coming out now.
It would be more embarrassing for, you know, I've given Jake, I've thrown him a couple bones. It would be pretty embarrassing if they were cheating and they didn't cheat low enough. Like if they threw away their morals and their ethics and their pride and they cheated and they still lost.
Go kill the competition if you're going to cheat, yeah.
Yeah, I have more respect when I see the people on social media that like lie and say they saw like a 54.
Exactly, yeah.
And everyone's like, "Really?" And it's like, "Yeah, it's whatever card." And, you know, to win the prize, I have more respect for those people that just straight up lie and like do some big lie. And we birdied every hole.
So while Brett's team was getting investigated for cheating, and it turns out it doesn't look like they were,
slid right under.
There was other activity going on. It's like that smash and grab stuff that happens. Yeah.
He created a diversion. He got everyone looking at Brett's team, and then all of a sudden he's hitting 3 tee shots.
Smart.
Wow. This is fascinating. This could be like a whole like investigative edition of the morning show one time. We just question everybody that played in the fan run open.
Well, that's part of the reason I didn't want a prize to go to first place, because I didn't trust other people not to cheat. But I forgot about that damn trophy and the bragging rights inside the office, which I like Tim a lot. I respect Tim. I think of him as an honorable man, but, you know, no one's even looking into the team winner or the guy who took the trophy down at 9 under. Maybe something fishy was going on there, too. I don't know. It's really a testimony and a credit to his standing that they shot 9 under. No one's even raised any red flags.
Yeah. It's just like, hey.
That's Tim. He's not going to cheat. That's a good old boy.
He's snickering right now, listening. Yeah. Like those fools.
He's like, "Oh, man, I shot 3 under, these idiots." Yeah.
I think they just have better vibes. You know,
I think they did, too. They seemed like they're having a great time.
I would ride around, and I was just checking in on people. I'd ask them, "Hey, you need a drink? Hey, you need a koozie? Hey, what's your score? How's it going?" And, like, everybody be listening to, you know, certain types of music. You had Bear blasting out some rocks. People
we didn't have music.
Rap.
I think that's a big key for next year.
You did or didn't?
Didn't.
You didn't sync up the cart? The cart was a Bluetooth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Marcus offered up some music. I heard him offer it up. Maybe not to you.
You mean to tell me you kids rode around in that damn golf cart and never looked up and said, "Huh, maybe this cart with, like, the great technology and GPS had Bluetooth that I could connect my phone?"
Normally those speakers are trash. I just never
did. No, it was great.
Okay.
I will say Williams Creek, they were a great host. They had great products. And
yeah, good for
you. I had a speaker I meant to bring, but I didn't need it because, yeah, they had Bluetooth. And plus, I forgot the speaker at home, so I was kind of mad, but then I hooked up. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, no.
I think Bear brought an additional speaker, though. Cause
oh, he did, 100%.
His sounded like, you know, like he was using a big subwoofer or something. It was super loud.
I got to say, for Vibes Guy Tucker, that's kind of his role to check to see if there's music. Like, if he's going to be the Vibes Guy, he's got to make sure the vibes are good. So, yeah, okay, you're 6 under with no music, maybe a little bit more impressive. But I was going to say, people are listening to some rap, some rock, and I pull up next to Tim and I hear, "You say it best when you say nothing at all." Just listening to some 90s country ballads, I guess, to keep him even keeled and help him on the green. I don't know.
I love that.
Just a couple of fellas riding around listening to some love songs.
That legitimizes his 9 under to me, if he's just listening to old country love songs.
And I will say, again, you know, since we're picking this apart, I was listening at one point, and Marcus offered some music, and maybe it was Tucker who said, "No, we're good."
So, I would have taken some music from Marcus. You know,
the Alison Krauss version, too. The woman singing. Yeah, he was listening to the woman version of it. So vibes were there. They were chill. So, I mean, I think that helps on the green, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not disputing Tim's score at all. We had one where we were backed up to them, like we were, you know, back and back, I guess, on a different hole, and I asked him what he was, and it was it made sense from what he was at. He was at like 5 under through 8 holes or something like that. I'm not questioning Tim at all. We just need music, I think. That's my takeaway from this. I need some dad yacht rock to go with my 6 under.
Sam will have nobody from his team talking to him now after this segment.
He's taking a blowtorch to everybody. It's everyone's fault except his.
Y'all did kind of come at me at the start of it. I got to defend my team, and then it's turned into me just destroying my team in the process of it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we could have used some music. That would have been good.
Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. The next Golf Open, you'll want to be there. It was a fun time. It's a fun time. We got the Smokies Night coming up May 30th. There will be no competitions there, I guess, but I'm sure there'll be some chicanery and shenanigans. Stick with us.